south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Today I have to start out with some bad news. It seems that your Uncle Sam is making it harder and harder for you to become an expat. He absolutely doesn't want you to leave the good old USS of R, of A. He wants to keep you in that pen with all the other cows so that you're easy to find and he can milk you at will. And when citizens wake up to the fact that it's no longer good to be a milk cow in Uncle Sam land, and they decide they want to leave, that doesn't sit very well with Big Brother. And that puts your Uncle Sam in a panic. Can't leave that barn door open now, can we? So they're slamming the door more and more each day and each month until you just won't be able to accomplish getting your ass and your assets out of the first world like you were easily able to do just a few short months ago. Now there is a slim little time window of perhaps a few months where you can still do that, but still not that easy. And by January 1st, 2014, looks like everyone in the first world who wants to transfer monetary assets out of the first world to a foreign bank account, that is a personal account in a foreign bank, or to a trust or foreign corporation that you have some holdings or ownership or participation in, well, if you do your wire transfers after the 1st of January 2014, a little more than 7 months from now, you're likely to find that the bank that initiated your wire transfer in the States will withhold 30% of your money. And if they do, you'll have a hell of a time ever recovering it. So if that happens, you can figure generally that you can kiss that 30% goodbye. Those are the new rules under the U.S. FATCA legislation. FATCA meaning the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, which Congress sneakily buried deep into a 1,600-page jobs bill called the HIRE Act, H-I-R-E. I mean, what politician in his right mind wouldn't vote for a HIRE Act? Sounds innocuous enough, right? So that's why it got voted on so easily, rapidly, and without much discussion at all. So what does it all mean? Well, first world banks, by law, are forced to withhold 30% of every wire transfer from an American citizen in the U.S. to a foreign bank. And they'll grab that 30% if the foreign bank or offshore financial entity does not sign an information exchange treaty with the IRS stating that they're going to give up every U.S. citizen and all of his or her account information, whether it's a personal account or a corporate account, doing business at that foreign bank or financial institution. And now you're all thinking, wow, that sucks. But it's still May 2013, so that'll give you a good 7 or 8 months to get your feces together, to cash out or liquidate or do your wire transfers or whatever's necessary to get your assets out of the country. That'll work. You've got 7 months before it actually kicks in, right? Well, in a word, not quite. Well, that was two words, wasn't it? Anyway, I'm here to tell you that as of last month, already some first world banks are withholding that 30%, even though they're not required to do so till January 1st, 2014. And how do I know that? Well, certain expat businessmen that live down here in Latin America have told me personally that since a month or two ago, every so often a first world wire transfer will come through with 30% exactly lopped right off the top. There's really no recourse. There's no one to complain to. And like one expat businessman told me, there's just no rhyme or reason to it. Some transfers come through perfectly fine and others with the 30% lopped off. So why the FATCA law anyway? What's the purpose of it? The IRS is trying to grab that 30%, thinking that a lot of money that's going out of the United States in wire transfers is pre-tax money. They know a hell of a lot of money that's been exiting the States has slipped by the tax authorities. In fact, that's why it's all leaving the States in the first place, because everybody hates the tax man. But the fact is, it wasn't such a huge deal up to now. Sure, money's always been trickling out of the States, looking for kinder, gentler places to land. But only in the last 2 or 3 years has the smart money been really galloping out of the States to much more welcoming, much more private, and much less restrictive foreign banks. In fact, it's turned into a pretty huge problem for the IRS, and there's no end in sight. and thus the new strict regulations and currency controls. But that FATCA law is not just about collecting or withholding 30% on transfers going out of the country that they think are pre-tax dollars. It turns out the real reason for the FATCA law is to collect as much information as they can on U.S. citizens and expats who have left the country and who are doing business or making investments in foreign lands. It's just another heavy-handed Big Brother move aimed at monitoring every U.S. citizen, directed at citizens who have voted with their feet and who have left the country. So the way it works out, if your bank in Honduras or Bolivia does not sign that IRS tax information exchange agreement, then if you send a wire transfer from your bank in Cleveland, after January 1st, 2014, 30% will be automatically withheld. There I go. I said the C word at the 5-minute mark. That means no more this show. Anyway, this FATCA withholding tax business can get really confusing. Now, consider this. Suppose you're a German living in Chicago, and you have a bank account there and a business, and you send a wire transfer to a bank in Peru. Well, guess what? If that bank in Peru did not sign the IRS information exchange agreement, then 30% will be withheld from that German's bank account in Chicago up in the States. Now, as you might imagine, there's nothing fair about that at all because he's not a U.S. citizen. But it doesn't matter. If the foreign bank receiving the funds has not signed that IRS agreement, the 30% withholding will apply. And that's why, and you have to get this now, all foreign banks are now falling in line, even the ones that had heavy bank secrecy, like Belize, the Bahamas, Liechtenstein, Cayman Islands, etc., even Austria, which had that totally secure, private, and anonymous passbook account called a Sparbuck account, which was truly just a plain old numbered account with no one's name or information recorded anywhere at all. Well, this week, they too have caved in. Yes, they'll still have Sparbuck accounts, but only for Austrian citizens. They'll no longer be available to foreigners. So, bottom line, with the FATCA Act, the IRS has stripped away a level of privacy that had been one of the great advantages to banking in a foreign bank. But that doesn't mean privacy and anonymity are dead. Not by a long shot. Not down here in Latin America. But you'll have to come down to my Latin American seminar in June to find out certain details on the subject and what you might call loopholes that I just can't talk about on the air. Anyway, can't you see the mess and the chaos being caused by this FATCA legislation worldwide? Isn't it completely obvious by now why foreign banks do not want U.S. citizens as customers? Way too much paperwork, way too much hassle, and too much pain for so little gain, you know? In fact, it's been claimed that the U.S. Treasury and the IRS are going to have to add 50 to 100,000 new government jobs just to oversee and monitor this new poison pill that Big Brother has concocted. Now, if you're wondering what kind of payments fall under that 30% withholding law, it says here on the U.S. Department of Treasury website, in the question and answer segment, in more or less simple terms, which is amazing for government doublespeak, it says, a withholdable payment of 30% can be levied on a U.S. source income that comes from annual or periodic income, gross proceeds from the sale or disposition of property that can produce U.S. source income or dividend income, regular wage income, interest payments, dividends, rents, salaries, wages, premiums, and annuities, which covers just about any U.S. income source, which can be transferred to a foreign bank or offshore financial entity. So basically, if you look at it closely, the primary goal of this FATCA law is to gain information about U.S. persons living or doing business abroad. And the point is, your U.S. bank or financial institution up there will not withhold the 30% if your offshore bank or foreign entity signs that IRS agreement. And I assure you, they have already, or they will, by January 1st, 2014. Now, I've also been told by reliable sources inside one of the big foreign banks down here that there will be a lot of mistakes made at first. Anytime the rules are changed and compliance guidelines are tightened and more paperwork is generated, there will be mistakes, and lots of them. So, in fact, there will be many cases where that 30% is withheld by mistake. But because all the rules and regulations are not even set in stone yet, if it happens to you and your wire transfer, even though your bank has complied, fat chance you'll get that 30% back. And remember this, nearly all banks worldwide will comply. And because of that, after the whole scheme is set into motion, only a very, very small percentage of transactions will have that 30% withheld. Which means, if you think about it, the IRS, Big Brother, and Uncle Sam don't even care about collecting that 30%. It's all about the account information that the foreign banks give up on you and every other American citizen that has assets outside of the U.S. And basically, like this foreign banker friend of mine told me, when the subject's brought up at meetings within the bank, the bankers are not at all happy about the extra paperwork and reporting requirements. Because you see, with that extra workload, every foreign bank has to put on new employees just to comply. Which, for one thing, is going to push up bank charges. It has to. And that, my friends, is why it's so difficult to open up a personal bank account in a foreign country these days. And get this, all the paperwork coming from foreign banks to the IRS in the States has to be in the format they want and in English. Though, as of yet, not all those details have been finalized by the IRS. A lot of it's still up in the air. Now, you've got to know that First World and foreign banks are scrambling like crazy right now to get the personnel together to handle all this paperwork. Since over 10 million wire transfers a day come out of First World banks and end up in foreign accounts. In fact, that's why this FATCA legislation was written to be implemented in two stages. One that kicked in on January 2013, initially affecting just the new accounts opened at U.S. financial institutions beginning on January 1st, 2013. Then, the rest of that law kicked in for everyone else with bank accounts opened before January 1st of this year. Now, a lot of big U.S. corporations aren't really U.S. corporations anymore. If you check their paperwork, you'll find they look like U.S. corporations, but they're registered in foreign countries like Panama, Bahamas, Cayman Islands, etc. So if they have a large market outside the U.S., they can easily shield that income from the U.S. tax authorities. And that's just what they do. For example, General Motors, Caterpillar Tractor, Case, and John Deere, who, believe it or not, sell more cars, tractors, and earth movers to China, India, and Latin America than they do in the States, they pay very little U.S. tax. You see, a long time ago, back in the 80s and 90s, big U.S. companies like that shuffled around their corporate domiciles. So they're not exactly under the thumb of a runaway IRS. But many expats don't know how to play that game, though a lot of them do. Many expats still have an income source coming in from the States, which can put them front and center as a target for that FATCA law. So the question is, are there legal or quasi-legal ways to get around that 30% withholding? Well, sure, you bank with a foreign bank or entity that signed that IRS information exchange agreement. Then, no 30% withholding. But then, if your name is on any corporate or personal account, your bank is going to give it up, and they're going to give up your deposits and withdrawals and account balances to them, too. Not a good deal, right? So, are there loopholes? Are there legal ways to get around that, like the big boys who incorporate offshore do? Well, there's one thing certain. You who are thinking about becoming expats better get your ass and your assets out of the U.S. by January 2014, then you won't have to stress about it. Now, a lot of people are wondering just what happens when a foreign financial institution signs a tax and information exchange agreement with the IRS. Well, here's what they agree to do. Beginning January 1st, 2014, they agree to give the name, address, and U.S. tax identification number of each U.S. account holder on record. And in the case of a foreign corporation or an SA corporation, they have to give up the name of every substantial U.S. owner of that corporation, which means they give up any U.S. person that owns more than 10% of a foreign company, including those famous anonymous SA corporations. And the foreign bank also gives up the account numbers and the year-end balance or value and the gross receipts and gross withdrawals or payments from that account. Yep, Big Brother has set the trap. So, what advice do I have to offer? Where there's a problem, there's always a solution. And if you want some really solid slam dunk solutions on that sticky problem and 100 others, all you have to do is come down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar from June 23rd to the 28th, and you'll be privy to 6 jam-packed days of pearls of advice on anything and everything you need to be a successful expat, including, of course, how to get your ass and assets down here with a minimal amount of trauma. With, of course, some great tips on how to remain anonymous while maintaining a low profile, which is what all expats should strive for, of course. So anyway, I've got a few seats left, so go to expatwisdom.com and click on the seminar link for full details. And for all of you guys and gals who've sent me emails lately, telling me how much you want to come down to the event and how you're trying to juggle your schedule and the money and all that, all I can say is it's now or never because the window is closing fast. And for those of you who are hemming and hawing and are on the fence, in less than a year's time, come January 1st, 2014, you're really going to wish you'd made the effort. Like one new expat just told me, one of the guys who came down to my last seminar and never left, he says, you know what, I'm on Skype with my relatives and friends up in New York a couple times a week. And it's funny, the longer I'm here, the less we have in common and the less we have to Skype about. Funny how those first world connections do fade rather fast. Anyway, he says all his New York friends and relatives are rather depressed except when they talk about the good old days. So it's not now, today, the present, or the future that anyone's looking forward to. There's not a hint of optimism anymore. And what do people talk about when they get together and sit around the kitchen table? It never fails. Eventually, they get around to talking about the good old days. And anyone with a brain up in the States knows those days are never coming back. So my new expat friend says, I let my friends and relatives sit around and talk about the good old days, if that makes them happy. It used to be only the over 60 crowd and guys on Social Security used to talk that way, but now it's everybody, even people in their 20s and 30s. And as for me, I'm cut off from that kind of thinking. I can't relate. Not anymore, anyway. I'm down here now in Latin America, and even though it's only been 4 or 5 months, I know every day when I get up and I hear the roosters crow that for me and all the other expats down here, these are the good old days. Unlike my buddies in New York, I don't have to fantasize about it. Today, tomorrow, and every day hereafter are the good old days for me. Except for that damn rooster at 5 in the morning, I hit the jackpot. Okay, that said, like I promised, I'm going to get to some hate mail today. Like I mentioned last time, I've done over 255 shows here on PRN, and of all the hundreds and even thousands of emails I've gotten over the last 2.5 years, I've only gotten maybe 3 real pieces of hate mail, and I'm going to read one to you right now. Now, I have to preface this by saying that you all know that my show is for new expats and expat wannabes to give you guys an idea of how to live, work, play, and or do business down here, right? That's how it was intended, anyway. What I'm giving you is a real running start because I've made all the mistakes and I'm telling you how to avoid them and how to take advantage of things that I didn't even realize existed until I was down here a couple of years and figured it out. So my show is all about greasing the skids for all you expat wannabes and newbie expats down here. I never intended this show to be for expats who've been down here a long time. Why would they want to listen to me babble on? They already know what it's like down here. They're living it. And they know all about that thing I call the gringo advantage, though they might have a different name for it. Some might just call it damn good luck. Well, it doesn't matter because it's here and it's for real. And long-term expats know all about it. You think they're down here secretly making plans to escape back to the States? Don't make me laugh. And it turns out, the fact is, a lot of long-term expats down here don't like what I'm saying. They don't like when I tell you about the gringo advantage and about how to do business down here and the pictures I paint and the stories I tell. And it seems that for a lot of long-term expats that came down here as do-gooders, you know, Peace Corps and Kumbaya guys and Jimmy Carter Habitat for Humanity types and all those other evangelical groups that are saving souls for Jesus. Well, I'm just way too politically incorrect to break bread with those guys. My soul is too stained and unsavable, you know? And luckily, since I'm off the tourist trail, I hardly ever run into those guys. But apparently, some of them listen to my show. And I've been told that they're praying for me, too. I think they're praying for me to get cancer. So let me go ahead and read this cutting little email by Honest Abe. He's a long-term expat down here who doesn't seem to like what I have to say one bit. So here goes, but before I get into it, instead of correcting his phraseology, I'll read it exactly like he wrote it. Now, normally when I read emails, I take the liberty to correct the occasional twisted phraseology and grammatical screw-ups, since my mother was an English teacher and she beat me over the head with it 24/7. But in this case, I won't make his email sound any better or more cogent than it really is. I won't polish it to make it sound any better. So here goes. Johnny, For the record, you should know that many of us expats find repugnant your tirelessly spreading the idea, almost fashion evangelical, that gringos should come down and take advantage of Latin people. Your beloved gringo advantage you think is a benign practice of identifying opportunities, when in reality, it is taking advantage of people who have different priorities than money-centric gringos. Many of us love the soul of Latin America, and you seem oblivious to this aspect. If you care at all, you should try reading about the tortured history of the region. Read some Octavio Paz instead of listening to Glenn Beck, from who it seems you have developed your understanding of things. You advise that gringos in Latin America should keep a low profile, yet you are becoming more and more known throughout the region as the guy with your goofy laugh and the date-rape-like worldview. Signed, Abe. And by the way, that whole email was written in small letters with almost no punctuation at all. Though any third grader would be proud and would probably get an A on it, my mother'd be all over it with a felt marker. Anyway, this is what I wrote back to him. Well, Abe, it looks like gringos have four choices, and I see them as number one. You can stay home and go down with the ship, and if you don't believe that, you can tune into Richard Martin's PRN show. He explains it infinitely better than I can. Number two, gringos can come down with their own dough or pension or Social Security and spread the wealth around. Or number three, gringos could go to Costa Rica, Panama, etc., and live in a plastic gringo bubble pseudo-paradise. Or, number four, gringos can come down with eyes and brains alert and wide open and easily start a winning business by just observing the local competition. And if gringos come down and do the obvious, like, for example, make a much better product or provide a superior service, introduce first world efficiency, and or make things infinitely more sanitary, more dependable, less corrupt, more green and environmentally sound, or raise the bar any way we can, then I guess I'm guilty of promoting that as the gringo advantage. Now, as an expat yourself, you must certainly see that wherever Latins populate, they wreak total havoc on their own environment. It's really pathetic, yet 99.9% of Latins are totally clueless, just as we were before environmental laws and the proper activists with balls came onto the scene in the 60s and the 70s and beyond. However, since the vast majority of expats who come down are rather enlightened compared to the average cable-surfing gringo in Cleveland... Uh-oh, I said Cleveland again, didn't I? But I get a mulligan on that because it's in the email. Anyway, and then I wrote, people who become expats really are much, much better and kinder stewards of their adopted countries times 10 than the locals, who wave the flag endlessly and say how they love their country as they toss raw sewage onto the landscape by the boatload and whip out their Johnson any time and any place they have the urge. And by the way, Abe, can we call wanton landscape rape and epidemic womanizing just a few of those, quote, different, unquote, Latin priorities you speak about, as opposed to so-called gringo money-grabbing priorities? Or are those unique Latin traits and customs just unintended consequences of massive, unplanned parenthood? And yeah, about Octavio Paz, only about one Latin in 10,000 even knows who he is or was, and practically all of them are Mexicans. The ones who do remember him were forced to read his poems in school, and you surely know that Latins read 100 times less than money-grubbing gringos do. And look how much better off Mexico is today for Mr. Octavio Paz. It's obvious the Mexican cartels like the Zetas learned a whole lot from him now, didn't they? He's their role model, all right. Yep, those Nobel Prizes are quite nice paperweights, aren't they? Go ahead and ask Mr. Obama about that one. And by the way, if you are an expat in Latin America, how much do you pay your cleaning lady, or gardener, or maintenance guy? Is it $12 a day, the going rate, or $120 a day, like many stateside cleaning ladies would bring in? Oh, Abe, let's not take advantage now. Happy trails, signed Johnny. P.S. Sorry about that goofy laugh. I was born with it. So anyway, there it is, a piece of hate mail. Oh, and yeah, remember what he said about me taking my cues from Glenn Beck? Well, here's what I wrote in response to that. I said, oh, Abe, I forgot to tell you, I do not watch any U.S. TV at all and haven't for over 10 years. Yes, I do have cable, but I only watch the movie channels and TMC. I don't watch commercial TV. I read things instead. And for all of you guys and gals out there who think I'm a jerk for picking on his third grade writing style, I figure that's the least I could do after what he said about my goofy laugh. Oh, and just one more thing. Occasionally I get emails from people saying to me, Johnny, you know, I looked on the internet and I checked some bank websites out in countries like Costa Rica and Panama and Bolivia and Guatemala and Honduras, and I found out that they have CDs in the local currency and in U.S. dollars. And many of those banks will give you 10% yearly interest on a CD in the local currency and 4% interest on a CD in U.S. dollars. What's your opinion on putting money in the local currency CD versus the U.S. dollar CD? I mean, look at the rates you get in CDs at U.S. banks. You're lucky if you get 2%. Okay, well, let me answer that. You know, these guys are absolutely right. You can get 10%, even 12% sometimes in a local currency, but the minimum is usually about 25,000 U.S. dollars, which you will have to change into the local currency, and you'll lose a bit on that transaction, maybe 1 or 2% right off the bat. But still, it's a mighty high rate of return. However, you have to know that all third world currencies in the long run depreciate heavily against the dollar. And even though, for a snapshot of the moment, Brazil's currency, for example, has been appreciating against the dollar for the past couple of years, don't let that fool you. If you look at a 10 or 15 year history of any Latin currency, they've all lost a tremendous amount of ground against the dollar. So as for a local currency CD, don't do it. Even if it's 10 or 12%, it's a real speculative move. However, if you're going for a US dollar CD down here, and by the way, I can tell you right now that some good solid banks are paying 5% on US dollar CDs. But remember this, most Latin countries have many, many banks. Even small countries with 5 or 10 million people might have 10, 20, 30, even 50 different banks. So what you have to do is you have to investigate and pick one of the top three most solid banks in the country and put your CD there. And how do you know the good solid banks from the iffy ones? Well, governments are weak and there's virtually no bank transparency, and you can't really believe the published bank balance sheets. So who are you going to trust? Just ask your local lawyer. He'll be able to tell you right off the top of his head the two or three most solid and strongest banks in the country. Another reason you need a lawyer.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.